It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Balthaser.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 29 of The Scoop. I'm Dalton Balthaser, joined by my weekly Wednesday overbooked airline passenger, John DiCarlo. How's it going, John?
Should we be making light of that? I guess, hey, well, it's topical. It's topical.
Yeah, I could do something different.
I flew recently. It did not. The flight was not overbooked, and Lord knows I was not dragged off the plane. So, yeah, I guess it's a good day if that doesn't happen to you.
Yeah, it is. But it's just you and me today, John. Kyle, no Matt.
No, Kyle Gauss and Matt Vender are not here. They're going to miss out on talking later to my buddy Andrew Goldstein. I was a TV writer up in New York, does a podcast called Sorry I've Been So Busy, which he's jokingly referred to us sometimes as their sister podcast, so we'll talk to him a little bit later. But yeah, we're without Kyle and Matt, so it's just the two of us. We'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll
we
be
don't
fine.
Need them. Do we need them?
Yeah, the weather's good, so there's high spirits in the Al Scoop studio.
High spirits.
There's nothing holding us down.
Yeah.
But how was your moving day?
Yeah, so my wife and I got a new house. We're living in Havertown now. The move was Kyle helped me move. There were a couple pieces of furniture that were a lot heavier than I anticipated. So big thanks to Kyle, to my buddy Garrett Miley, who is also like covered some college basketball in the area for City of Basketball Love. Worked for Ultimate Frisbee League. He's a good guy. Graduated from St. Joe's last year. He helped me move. My buddy Eric helped me move out, and I had stuff in storage at my parents' place because Chelsea and I were living in South Philly. Had stuff over the past year in storage at my parents' place, at my mother-in-law's place in South Jersey. So, but yeah, we like the neighborhood. But Kyle stepped up his game. Kyle was wouldn't call him an NFL linebacker by any means, but he lifted some heavy stuff. Didn't complain. Did a good job. I gotta compliment the big guy. He helped out big time. Appreciated that.
You have one of those like back supports on like.
He did not. I probably should have been wearing that, but we all came through unscathed. I don't think anybody pulled any muscles. But yeah, he was good. He showed up. He was wearing like khaki pants to move in though, which I thought was kind of interesting, kind of funny. But hey, I'm not gonna question his moving outfit. He did well.
You're not gonna push away any help.
No,
you don't want to push away.
Not when you're moving. No, you feel bad enough as it is asking people. Yeah. You know, but we're fine. We moved in and happy to be living out there.
So a lot of good stuff coming up on the show. We'll talk some spring football, and as John said, we'll talk with Andrew Goldstein later on in the show. But first, we got to get to some news, some sad news from the Temple football community. Former head coach from 1970 to 1982, Wayne Harden, passed away at the age of 91 with a stroke on Wednesday. He was a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. He was inducted in 2013. He had an 80-50-3 record here at Temple during his 12 years here. And he still has a Temple record of 14 straight wins, 8 of those coming in 1973. 6 of them coming in 1974. John, this is it's a sad moment for sure for Temple Athletics and Temple football. What were your impressions of Coach Harden and you know his legacy on Temple football?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure anybody who's had the chance to talk to him is probably reflecting on any conversation they had with him. I'm sure if you check social media, you'll see anybody who had a chance to talk to him is probably talking about that now. We'll play a clip for you in a second. I had a chance to talk to him back in, I believe it was late August, early September, for a project I'm working on about the Temple football program. And, you know, I think Matt Rule talked before about how after they beat Penn State last season, one of the things he wanted to do was bring the game ball out to him. And Wayne told me during our conversation, he said, yeah, his intention was to go give me the game ball. It never actually got to me, but I didn't care. I wanted him to keep it. But, I mean, yeah, he's the coaching legend at Temple. I mean, when you look at his legacy, I mean, the players he coached between Temple and Navy, you know, he was at Navy. I mean, he took Navy to the 1961 Orange Bowl, the 1969 Cotton Bowl. He coached Roger Staubach. I mean, he was Roger Staubach's college coach, which is a huge deal. I mean, to get Navy to those bowl games at Temple, he coached Joe Klecko, Randy Grossman, Kevin Ross, Steve Watson, who was – I remember having Steve Watson football cards randomly when I was younger. Steve Joachim was the 1974 Maxwell Award winner. 80-52-3, like you said, in 13 seasons. He coached Temple to their first bowl win in 1979, the Garden State Bowl up in Jersey against Cal. You know, obviously, I mean, it's ironic. We've talked about this before for a program that's had more downs than ups. They've had some legendary coaches, Pop Warner, and Wayne Harden was the guy who really set the table before the modern turnaround happened. I mean, obviously there were some dark days before Al Golden got to Temple, and they got, you know, before that they were kicked out of the Big East. But Wayne was, I mean, again, was a legend. He was so special to so many people at Temple. I would hear people talk about how he still had a following. And in the conversation I had with Wayne, they had a 90th birthday party for him down in Florida, and a lot of his Navy players came back. A lot of his Temple players came back. And in that conversation we had, he said some of his Temple guys were like, we don't know some of these Navy guys. And he said, within 5 minutes, you'll feel like you knew them, you know, your whole life. I recruited them the same way I recruited you. We recruited your parents. We recruited you. It was just cool to hear about how so many people still gravitated toward him. I imagine a guy like Steve Conjar is really hurting today. Steve, and from what I understand, Steve and Coach Harden were really, really close. And Wayne would still get back to as many games as he could. And I mean, just affected so many people. And I'm sure we'll hear stories pouring in. So in this clip that you're about to hear here, one of the many things I asked Coach Harden about was, you know, what it was like for him to see Temple beat Penn State, you know, at the beginning of last season. It was a special thing. And he talked about, again, Matt Rhule coming out, handing him the game ball. So here's part of our conversation from a few months ago and what that gesture meant to him and what it was like to be there that day.
Well, I think it was a great thing that he beat Penn State, something I didn't do. Mm-hmm. And I'm not ashamed of the way we played, mm-hmm. by any stretch. Uh-huh. It's his school. He graduated from there, and it's kind of special. Mm-hmm. And I was happier than heck for him. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a great thing. He picked me up in the parking lot, mm-hmm. where we were at after the game, and he says I had most of my players that were there around, mm-hmm. A couple of hundred maybe, mm-hmm. and he says, "Yeah, we're going to give the game ball to Coach Harden."
Oh. What did that mean to you? I mean, how special of a moment was that for you?
Well, it was super. I mean, I there's nothing like winning. Mm-hmm. And I root for Temple every day. I root for Navy every day, and I root for Army every day, except for when they play Temple and Navy.
Mm-hmm. I know the players and the coaches will say it had to be just another game for us because they had to, you know how it is with football. You have to rebound the next week and you can't dwell too much on that win. But when you try to put it in perspective, what did it mean for Temple to beat Penn State after all those years? How big of a deal was that? If you had to explain how big
it was. Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's something that when I started there in 1970, we couldn't beat Bucknell. Mm-hmm. And then gradually we got better and better and better and won 14 in a row and get Penn State all they wanted every game we played against them. Mm-hmm. But not enough to win. Mm-hmm. But for him as a student and a graduate of Penn State, it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I think that I root for him every day.
All right, so that's just part of a conversation that I was very fortunate to have with Wayne Harden, and what we'll try to do, I think, in the next week or so is get the audio up from that conversation. I've been transcribing pieces of it, like I said, for a project that I'm working on, and maybe we'll get that up on the website just so people can hear his voice again. Like, it's a shame because the younger generation of sports fan doesn't even see past, you know, 2 or 3 years, and a lot of people don't know just how important Wayne Harden was to Temple football, and again, the fact that he was still 90 years old and coming back to games and still being around these guys who really just really, really still loved and respected him. So it's a huge loss for the Temple football community, huge loss for the Navy football community. So it really is a shame, but what a wonderful and impactful life, you know, Wayne Harden had. So hopefully, like I said, we can put up the audio from that conversation in the next couple of days or so, and hopefully get that out to you guys. And but yeah, definitely Temple football is hurting today, and anybody who played for him or was around the guy is definitely hurting today and thinking a lot about him.
And it give people a chance to hear his voice and reflect kind of on their memories of him as well. Mm-hmm. And as we move past that sad event for Temple football, we're going to talk some spring football here. There's some position battles. We're just over a week away from the Cherry and White game. The offensive line and Chris Wiesehan talked to the reporters and talked to the media on Tuesday. What were some things, John, that stood out to you about the offensive line that does lose Deion Dawkins and does lose some guys up front there that were really impactful? What were your impressions of what Wiesehan had to say about the offensive line and how guys are going to kind of fit into this mold?
Well, Chris is a pretty upbeat and positive guy. And like the staff as a whole, I think we've talked about this before. Like, you know, Chris and Ed Foley are the two main holdovers from the previous staff, and Jeff Collins was smart to keep them. Frisman Jackson was going to stay, but obviously got an NFL gig. But Chris, I think, really thrives when he's coaching the offensive line. He's been asked a lot about the fact that Leon Johnson's missing spring ball. I would imagine that when Leon's healthy, he's going to be the left tackle. Jalen Robinson's your right tackle. Jovan Fair is at, I guess, left guard again. And then you have a few guys competing for that right guard spot, whether it's Adrian Sullivan, Brian Carter. Chris mentioned Aaron Ruff's name this week. I still don't see how Aaron's going to figure in for a lot of playing time. We did see him in practice again in the last 20 minutes, but he was in with, I know these guys say we don't have a depth chart, but you can hear him say ones, twos, threes, and Aaron was, in the time that we were there, I didn't see him practicing with the first team, although they do rotate a lot of guys. But Chris is taking an upbeat approach because, you know, people will say, well, you're losing Deion Dawkins, you don't have Leon Johnson with you right now, but he says, I see it as an opportunity to rotate a bunch of guys in. Cole Boozer, as you know, Chris Wiesehan, we did include the audio and the story that Matt put together earlier this week. He did mention that Cole Boozer has gotten bigger and stronger, his footwork has improved, so he could provide some depth at tackle. And so I think he sees it as an opportunity to mix a bunch of different guys in. And then the key piece for him is Matt Hennessy playing center. I had a chance to talk to Matt after practice, and Chris talked about how cerebral he is above the neck. He likes saying that, but Matt did it. I think he had some Ivy League offers, you know, played at a good high school program up in North Jersey, and not a really, really big guy, but does seem to have a pretty good command of the position. And, you know, coaches were talking, you know, last season about him being, you know, the heir apparent to, you know, initially Kyle Friend and then Brendan McGowan, and they seem really, really happy with what he's doing. He played at Don Bosco Prep in North Jersey, so he played against a high level of competition, and he seems to be the guy at center. So yes, they're losing Deion Dawkins, but if Leon Johnson can come back healthy, it seems like Jalen Robinson, the more experience he gets, the better he is. I mean, Leon and Jalen, if they're your two tackles, you have two big, strong, athletic bookend tackles who are really tall and big. And if you have Matt playing well at center, and if Jovan Fair takes the next step that he's supposed to take, and you can get, again, good competition at that right guard spot, whether it's Adrian Sullivan, Brian Carter, or maybe anyone else who comes along, they could be in a pretty good position. Well, we'll play this clip here for you from Chris Wiesehan talking about what he's seen from the offensive line. Again, pretty upbeat, pretty positive, and just talking about what he's seen so far. And again, you can listen to that entire interview in Matt Bender's story from earlier in the week. He talks a little bit about Darian Bryant, talks about a lot of different guys on the line. But here's Chris just talking about what he's seen from the line so far this spring.
Well, I think the Boozer's doing a great job. I think Jalen has really ascended. He's become a lot more violent, a lot more physical. I think he's understanding the game. It's slowing down for him. And then Boozer's done a great job. I mean, his weight has gone up. He's soaring right now. We're very excited about him.
What's he up to now?
He's about 285. So he's on a really good plan. He's followed it very. He's been very precise with everything as far as his diet goes.
So there, as you can hear, Chris saying, you know, he's talked about what he's seen from Jalen Robinson, what he's seen from Cole Boozer, you know, again, he sees opportunity. Chris has always been a pretty upbeat, positive guy. Later on, if you listen to the entire interview on the site, he has that classic tried and true remark where he says, five steaks at the table, it's a matter of who wants to eat. But again, I think he really, just watching him in practice, he really thrives in coaching that position. So, I mean, I really think that the line, for the most part, is going to be okay. I think I know he's young, and I know he only played just a tad bit last year before he got the medical red shirt, but I think Matt Hennessy is going to be an upgrade over Brendan McGowan. I think Jalen Robinson has a chance to be really good. Leon Johnson has a chance to really improve. Obviously, losing Deion Dawkins hurts. But if Adrian Sullivan takes that next step and if Jovan Fair takes that next step, I think the line can be fine. The interesting storyline is obviously you have a pretty solid offensive line in front of you. You have three of the best receivers in the conference in Ventel Bryant, Keith Kirkwood, and Adonis Jennings. Two young promising tight ends in Steve Petrick and Kenny Yeboah, and you've got one of the better backs in the league in Rockwell Armstead. Question is, you know, who's going to be the quarterback, whether it's Logan Marchie, who he's still my bet just based off of what I'm seeing. And, you know, Anthony Russo's in the mix, you know, Todd Senteo's in the mix, and Frank Neutile's in the mix. So you're going to have some decent pieces along, you know, again, along the line at the skill position. It's just a matter of who's going to be steering the offense, and that will continue to be the big storyline heading into next week's spring game and, of course, into preseason camp in August.
And there's some other news coming out of Temple football as well the other day. Alex Starzik, the senior punter, has been suspended indefinitely. That's really all we can tell you at this point. That's just something that came out from the Temple football program a while ago. I think that's kind of a huge impact, especially last year. He had some games where his rugby-style punt really, really helped the special teams in the position battle as well, the field position battle, I should say. And some of those punts actually hit defenders, and they were able to recover those. What do you think's the impact, whether it's short-term or long-term, on the special teams without Starzik?
I mean, the impact is it's one more headache for a relatively new coaching staff to say, now we've got to deal with this. Now, I don't really know what the deal is. I don't know if it's an attitude problem thing. As Kyle posted on our message boards, he's still, you know, Alex is still a current student at Temple, so... So we'll see what happens. You know, I wouldn't be completely surprised if he comes back. And in the meantime, it's Aaron Bumeri handling the punting duties in spring football. So if Starzik comes back in, you know, in August, I would assume it's, you know, it'll be his job. But, you know, Kyle also pointed out they are bringing in a kid from Downingtown West, Connor Bowler, who has been described to Kyle as a bit of a steal. He had a high school injury. I believe he was in a car accident, but showed a lot of promise. Is supposed to have a pretty strong leg, so they'll have to plug in somebody else. So it's a bit of an interesting storyline. Again, I don't know what the exact infraction was. If it was something brewing with the new coaches, again, it could be an attitude thing. I really don't know. But it'll be Aaron Bumeri handling duties. Some people have asked about Austin Jones. Austin Jones has been out on the practice field and jogging around with the kickers and punters. So he's moving around after tearing his ACL at Memphis, you know, this past season. But I don't see him, you know, handling the punting duties as of now. I think, again, things could change. I think the course of action for Austin Jones will be that he'll probably try to pursue a red shirt and, you know, either win back the job at Temple for one last year or try to transfer somewhere else. But I think it's either going to be Starzik punting or Connor Bowler from Downingtown West. But, yeah, a bit of a headache. Again, I'm sure a new staff, they're trying to figure out who their new quarterback is. They're trying to get to know everybody, know the culture and everything. So I'm sure they're not thrilled with it, but it's something they're going to have to get through. All right, so we are very, very excited to have with us on The Scoop this week my friend Andrew Goldstein, who does a little bit of everything up in New York. He's been up there since he graduated college, what, 1999? 99 or 2000?
I was class of 2000.
Class of 2000. So I'm trying to shave a year off your life. But Andrew and I know each other from our days at Temple. Does a great, great podcast called Sorry I've Been So Busy with our friend Matt Goldich, who is doing a sold-out stand-up show in New York Thursday night, correct?
Yeah, he's recording his album, actually.
Yeah. So a very funny guy. Highly suggest listening to that podcast. Andrew's also working at MTV, has done so much in his career, has been a writer for WWE, worked at VH1 on Big Morning Buzz. I'm biased, but I think he's one of the funniest people in the world, and we're very, very happy to have him on The Scoop today. Andrew, thanks for spending some time with us. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, John, and Dalton, a.k.a. Dutch.
Dutch Dalton, I love it.
Dutch Dalton in high school baseball. That's what my high school coach called me, Andrew. So
I love it.
It's always good to relate to people. It's like you've known me for 10 years already, and it's only been
there
about a minute and a half.
No, it's an honor. You know, we say it all the time on our podcast. You have to start one to catch up with your friends. So this is a perfect way to catch up with you, Johnny.
Yeah, so we know we'll get into some Temple sports talk, some NFL draft talk, a little bit of everything. But tell me about the podcast. I love the concept of it. You hear it all the time. Oh, sorry, I've been so busy. But the concept of it is great. You guys have had all sorts of guests on there. More recently, you had
Janine Garofalo,
a ton of big names. Just tell me about the concept and how it started. And, you know, you and Matt have known each other for years, but just tell me about how it started and how it picked up the momentum that it has.
Thanks, Matt. Matt and I went to camp together. We were counselors at camp together. We moved to New York together. We both moved to New York after college. We were both NBC pages. We both got into TV production. We both did stand-up comedy. So we've sort of followed each other in life. And recently, in the last, five or so years, when Matt moved back, he was in L.A. for a while. When he came back to New York, we kept saying, we should do a podcast. And then we were thinking of what should the premise be. And we both kind of landed on the fact that everyone in New York particularly, but I'm sure it happens everywhere, I'm sure it happens in Philly, everybody's just always so busy. Everybody just is, their default is, oh man, I'm so busy. I don't know if I can make it. I don't know if I can, make that night out or whatever it is. And so we were like, that's the podcast. It's, let's find out what people are actually so busy doing, and whether they actually are busy. We want to find out what they're doing. So we end up talking to really cool people who are doing really cool things. And sometimes we talk to people who are actually not so busy and like what they're lying. And, trying to convince people that they're so busy doing. But really, they're just walking around the city, drinking coffee and watching, binge-watching TV.
And you had one of the things, I think you guys are really versatile and very flexible. Like, I remember the episode you guys did with Judah Friedlander. And, of course, he's done some great work on 30 Rock. And when you had him on, it was almost more of like a serious, like, life conversation. He talked about anxiety with writing and stuff. So when you have a guest on, and they're just getting into some deeper stuff, do you guys just go with it, or do you kind of let them go in whatever direction, or do you kind of try to get them to crack more jokes? Because I thought that was an interesting interview that you guys handled really well. I learned a lot about how he writes, and I expected him to come on and crack a ton of jokes, but it was almost more like a witty, like crafty, like NPR type of interview.
Yeah, my whole goal is to be Terry Gross, so
fresh air.
Look, we never want to force it. Our whole thing is let our guests come in and we follow them. So a lot, we love to get into the weeds about the minutiae of people's day. So, second half of the podcast is always take us through a typical day in your life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that ends up being laugh out loud, hilarious. But sometimes, as you mentioned with Black Judah, his day is consumed with anxiety and organizational problems and trying to figure out like where he put the little scrap of paper that he wrote a great joke on and paying bills. Like, these little minutiae ticky-tack things in life are the things that he is bogged down with. And then his refuge is at night when he gets to go on stage. So that was like a cool, really fun revelation to be a part of, and just sort of happened just because we asked him to take us through his typical day. But then, other times, we have other comedians on who crack us up. But we're talking to TV producers. We really pride ourselves, too, on not just having on-camera people, but the people behind the scenes. Because both Matt and I, Matt's a writer on Late Night with Seth Meyers, and I'm out here in the New York production world. And a lot of times the people behind the camera are just as entertaining, just as funny, just as smart and witty as the people on camera. So we've had a lot of producers, writers, directors, all kinds of people who really are busy making really cool content.
Does our friend, so we share a mutual friend, well, really, you introduced me to him, and we have a mutual dentist in Jesse Schaffson, who a couple times has been your busy body of the week. Does he truly appreciate like the honor that's involved there with being the busy body of the week?
I just saw him, all three Schaffson brothers, these guys that I grew up with and introduced Johnny to in college, but they all three were in New York two weeks ago, and like all they want to do is talk to me about the podcast. Just because I shout them out all the time. Jesse like plays the podcast in his office while patients are in the chair. So yeah, but people take the honor seriously, and we shouted after you shouted out the Sorry I've Been So Busy podcast on the Scoop. That like next week we shouted you out as the busybody of the week. But I can't
which I appreciate.
And I can't pinpoint which episode it was, but I'm working on tracking it down, and I'll tweet it to you. But the scoop has been shouted out on the podcast.
Thank you, buddy. Unless I've missed it, are you going to have your mom on at some point, or has she been on already?
No, she has not been on. That's a great suggestion. As you know, when I was a producer on Big Morning Buzz Live, the morning show on VH1, we had my mom via telephone a few times. She's quite the character.
Fantastic.
She refers to DC as BJ, because she can't quite remember.
She always forgets
my
name.
I have a friend who goes by initials, so she's always like, "How's your friend BJ?"
A more interesting character, your mother or my father?
That would be a fun conversation. I thought you were going to say my mom or my brother Randy. But,
well, Randy is the wittiest and craftiest internet troll around. His brother starts, Dalton, this is no joke, his brother starts Facebook conversations. Literally last week, were we not in a Facebook chat with Gary Cobb, right?
Yeah, he will start like mass group Facebook conversations, and he'll throw in like WIP personalities to see if they'll respond.
Aware, right?
Yeah, he'll be like Harry Mays, G. Cobb. Crazy.
Yeah, and they're really there. And I'm not gonna lie to you, I'll be in a meeting and I'll look down, I'll see something from Randy, and I'll occasionally check every 5 or 10 minutes just to see if Gary Cobb bites and says like, "Hey."
Yeah, I think people get it. I think they know it this much. But for context for your listeners, tell an abridged version of the Mike Babel story, since it is Temple basketball related.
He asked about him at a press conference, right, when Mike Babel was at UMass?
My brother does production work as well in Philly, mostly sports related, and so it was Temple UMass, and my brother was in the post-game press conference. Everybody's asking, you know, questions for their story, you know, for their story of the next day. And my brother jumped in with a question after, you know, like 20 minutes into the press conference. He asked about the offensive potential of Mike Babel. Now, for those who remember, Mike Babel was the one guy in the starting five for that UMass team that did not have any offensive potential. I guarantee they didn't run one play for him all season. He was sort of the defensive stopper. And, he stood it with straight face. And just asked, talk about the offensive potential of Mike Babel.
He asked that to Bruiser Flint, right? Or was that to Calipari? Yeah.
Yeah, it was that. It was those later seasons with Bruiser Flint.
Yeah, so that would be a fun conversation to compare my dad and your mom. Some of our other friends came over for Christmas one year, and my dad offered Andrew an array of like 6 or 7 different mixed drinks, right?
Yeah. Well, you want a mixed drink? Your buddy Jeff has one.
Yeah.
John's dad is definitely a character. He should come on the scoop.
Oh God, no! I told them already he can't have an account on Al Scoop. If he got on the message boards, I just don't think he understands message. He certainly doesn't understand message board culture. He doesn't really understand social media culture, because what frightens me now is that my mom stays logged into Facebook, and my dad will comment every once in a while. And that frightens me. That truly frightens me.
Yeah.
He wants to get on Twitter. I told him I just absolutely won't.
He would just launch into Johnny Little League stories.
Yeah, yeah, which involved me like having to, you know, run around the bases and then run and finding a Port-a-John somewhere. Who knows? Well, tell us about the current gig. You know, you're a showrunner now at MTV and doing some great work there. Tell us about more stuff that you've been busy with in addition to the podcast.
Yeah, so I'm show running my first series. It's actually for MTV International, which means that it will air on MTV in like 16 international markets for now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go overseas and you turn on MTV in your hotel, you'll hopefully see my show. It's essentially human Beavis and Butthead. So it's music videos, new, newish, and old classic music videos. And then it's like comedian tandems on different in different living room setups watching the video. So we cut in between 6 different groups of comedians, and they're all sort of commenting in real time on these semi-new and like classic music videos. And it's really fun. It's like Mystery Science 3000 meets Beavis and Butthead.
Nice.
So Andrew, I saw on your Twitter that you claim to be a burger connoisseur. Cheeseburgers are my favorite food. I'm curious to know, what is your ideal cheeseburger or burger that you've eaten, and what kind of stands out to you about it?
Well, first, it's a good question. Thank you for checking. I actually am in. I'm in a burger club that would I guess the trolling runs in my family because I stalk these guys called the Gotham Burger Social Club on Instagram. Because they're like 15 Wall Street dudes in their like 40s and 50s. And on Instagram, this is like three years ago, they were posting these amazing pictures of burgers like every month. So I would comment on theirs, and then I just personally do the same thing, and they would comment on mine. And then eventually I was like, I need to eat with you guys. And then they invited me out. And again, like I said, they're 15 dudes in suits from Wall Street talking about their Porsches and their summer houses.
How many terms do they use per day that you don't understand that you have to Google?
Well, I'll get to that in a second. But, you know, and then I walk in and I'm in, like, jeans and a button-down, and I'm, like, you know, cracking jokes and, you know, busting balls. And they loved me. I became sort of, like, the mascot of this group. And so now I'm, cut to 3 years later, I'm, like, in the group. You know, the second Tuesday of every month, we meet at a different, and we try a different burger at a different place here in Manhattan and Brooklyn and stuff. So, but to your question, you know, at first glance, you're like, oh, 15 Wall Street dudes. I'll go for the first time. They'll probably be, you know, you think Wall Street guys kind of have a perception now. So going in, I was like, I'm not going to like these guys. I'll go once for the experience and then never see these guys again. But then I went and they're the nicest dudes ever. Like, they defy the stereotype. Mm-hmm.
So what's your ideal burger then, Andrew?
Right. So to your original question, I don't like a double patty. I like a single patty. I think it's too much meat. and the bun is very important. I like a potato bun or a brioche bun. If you have a Kaiser roll, you can. That's blasphemy to me. But I like a good, like, if you've had Shake Shack, some version of what Shake Shack does is basically my ideal burger.
There you go.
Interesting. So I'm with WHIP Radio here at Temple. I've written for the Temple News. I've known John for 2 years now. I've seen, you know, everything with the scoop and writing for the Temple News. Do you have any funny John DeCarlo stories that you've been saving up for a long time?
From our days, that's a good question. What's a good one? I mean, they mostly involve John having to go to the bathroom and it not being like the most appropriate time, or you know. Or there being facilities that can, contain what John needs to do. But also, you know, John has really big. The later it gets at night, the bigger John's eyes get for food. And so we would usually end our nights out at the South Street Diner, which in its current, it was different than its current form. It was a lot less seedier of a diner when we would go. And, you know, it'd be like 2, 3 in the morning, and we're all ordering omelets and fries and pancakes and stuff. And then John gets, like, turkey croquettes.
I did. I don't know why.
3 in the morning.
Yeah. Terrible food decision.
And then that's what leads to John needing the bathroom, so.
Yeah. In fairness, what was it, a couple years ago, you met up with me in South Philly. You had Korean barbecue with Jesse or Danny, right? And you could not wait till you got back to my place in South Philly. You're like, I had to make a stop at, what, like 11th and Snyder or something like that.
No, I was coming over to your place, and I had to go to the bathroom really bad, and you weren't home yet because I think you were at a game finishing up your interviews, or you were at Temple still making your way back to your apartment, and I had to go to the bathroom at the Texaco station, like on the corner of you and like Snyder and something else. To answer your question, a lot of it comes down to bathroom stories and or like crazy sort of food stories.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, kudos to you with the Burger Club and eating that many burgers. Andrew had his bachelor party in Austin. God knows how much barbecue you had, and God bless your stomach for that.
I love that city so much. If I knew about it in my 20s, I would have moved. I would have figured out some way to spend some significant time in Austin. But I don't know if you've been down there, but
Austin's great.
I mean, you know, the university's there, the state capital's there, and then, like, it's Brooklyn in terms of restaurants and bars and social scene. So it's really, really cool. And there's a river, there's lakes, it's crazy.
So let's talk NFL draft. So Andrew graduates from college, he heads up, and even before, when he was still in college, I graduated from Temple in 98. Like Andrew said, he graduated in 2000. And one of our traditions that we have to pick up again somehow, some way, is to watch the NFL draft together. So like pre-Twitter, pre-Facebook, he would go online or get magazines, wherever, and would literally make draft packets for us and hand them out. And a couple of years we went up to your place in New York, or we would get together, what, Danny and Harris's place, Harris Adler, who's now on Bruce Pearl's staff at Auburn, and we'd get together and watch the NFL draft. It was like a tradition. So the Eagles have the 14th pick. The draft is in Philly this year. There are a couple Temple ties. Hassan Reddick will go in the first round. Maybe Deion Dawkins heads, you know, maybe sneaks in at the end of the first round. But you're an Eagles fan. This is one of your favorite times of the year. What do you want to see the Eagles do, and do you still put together draft packets?
Well, first of all, let me just say that the NFL has ruined the draft weekend.
I would agree. By spreading it out.
Spreading it out. It's on a work night. Nobody can do what we used to do, which is we all would come back, you know, basically after college, we would relive college. On Friday night, mm-hmm. we would all get together in Philly, go out till late at night, and then we'd wake up Saturday morning at Johnny's place, watch the draft all day, and then go out again Saturday night, and then watch some of the draft Sunday morning,
yeah.
and then we would all take our trains and drive home and whatever we needed to do to get back home. And it was like this wonderful, like, way of, you know, having one weekend a year where we all got to kind of, you know, relive our glory. And then the NFL went and split it up into 3 days, one of which, you know, so the first round's on Thursday night. But I still keep the tradition alive up here. I always get guys together up here and we watch the first round. But yeah, I don't know why, what it is. I just love the NFL and NBA drafts. I love it. And I don't make draft packets anymore, but I read every mock draft. I even read the stupid 7-round mock drafts where, like, they're just naming people that don't exist. But 7th round, they're like, pick 187 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is, Hulk Hogan.
Do you remember when you had the concept for the 3D offense, Deuce, Donovan, and Ron Dane? He was obsessed with the Eagles drafting Ron Dane. He's like, I got it, 3D offense. Never took effect.
I'm not saying I'm a Ray Dittinger. I'm just saying that, I wanted the 3D offense, which I still think could have been pretty good.
Yeah, I had. In fairness, I thought Danny Watkins was a good pick at the time, and that was a total disaster.
Let's not even get into that. But I'll say this about this year. You bring up Ron Dane. I've been on the Dalvin Cook train since middle of the college football season, Dalvin has been surpassed by one player, particularly in the draft now, who is 2 weeks out. What I'd like the Eagles to do, and I have a reason for this, which I'll get into in a second, I want Reuben Foster so bad, that the linebacker from Alabama, and I'll explain to you why, if you'd like to hear.
I would love to hear why. I don't disagree. I think if he's there, I think you got to pick him.
In my lifetime, the Philadelphia Eagles organizationally have never, ever put a premium on the linebacker position.
I would agree.
Right? It's been part of their core philosophy. They build the line, and they build the, you know, they try to build the skill position, mostly the receiver and the quarterback and the line. That's what they do early in the draft. And what has that gotten us? What has that ever gotten us? It got us a nice run in the early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. I could name on multiple hands, I could name the amount of impact, game-changing linebackers that they have passed over or made no effort to go get in exchange for taking players that have been outright busts. And, you know, a few years ago I wanted C.J. Mosley, and he was right in their range of going to get him, and they didn't get him. And then you look at the teams like Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Denver, and New England. They've all drafted impact playmaking linebackers in the first round recently, or in their during their runs. And the Eagles have never done it. So now I see they have Joe Douglas, who comes from Baltimore, who is the organization that puts a premium on the linebacker. And I see Reuben Foster right in the range of should be around, should be around by pick 14. And I see him slipping in mock drafts. And I'm just like, guys, it's time. Like, do the Costanza, do the opposite of what you've always done, and let's see how it plays out for you. I want a linebacker, so I want Reuben Foster so badly.
I'm going to give you
Does that make sense? I rambled a little bit.
No, that wasn't even a ramble. That was good. I'm going to give you a draft scenario. Reuben Foster's off the board. Dalvin Cook is off the board. And give me a receiver you like between Williams, between Davis, between Ross.
I like John Ross.
Okay, so John Ross is off the board.
Those are my top three wants for the Eagles, those three guys.
All right, so they're off the board. I'm taking those away from you. I'm being a bad guy here. The Eagles are sitting there at 14. You want them to place a premium on linebacker. Hassan Reddick from Temple is there. Do you take him?
I worry about Hassan. I love Hassan Reddick. Let me just tell you. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to be a great NFL, a really good NFL player. I don't know if he's what the Eagles need. I feel like he could have some Marcus Smithy issues in terms of is he an end, is he
right.
a linebacker, coaches mm-hmm. not knowing. I don't mean in the effort department.
No, right.
I don't want to get it twisted that I'm saying he's like Marcus Smith from the effort or athleticism department.
I got you. Yeah.
I just worry that he'll get to a team with a coach who tries to do the wrong thing with him,
mm-hmm.
and because he's such a hybrid, he needs to. I think him more than anybody needs to go to a specific team in a specific defense that can maximize what Hassan Reddick does.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mesh with you guys? Have obviously watched way more Hassan Reddick than I have, but that's my feeling. If he came to the Eagles, I think he would be misused and abused.
I think it's a valid concern. I mean, the effort's there. I mean, he passes the eye test. He's really athletic. He is cliche and trite as it sounds. He plays with a chip on his shoulder because this is a kid who has told me and told reporters a couple times he didn't even think it was possible to be a walk-on in college. He thought his career was over after he played at Haddon Heights and was injured and came in as a not even a preferred walk-on. So this is all gravy to him. So he's really excited to prove people wrong. The one concern might be is that he is now a linebacker, and he did well enough in the Senior Bowl and in the Combine to prove that he could drop back in coverage, that he can move around. He's definitely not a Reuben Foster type, and that Reuben Foster has been a tried and true linebacker at Alabama, whereas, like you said, that is a concern. That's something that I think about, too. Could he be misused? I definitely think the want-to and the effort is there more than Marcus Smith. I don't worry about that, but I think it's a fair concern, I would say. Let's talk about... I want to ask you this first. I always wondered, so when you did Big Morning Buzz, you worked a lot with Nick Lachey. I thought I would see him at the wedding. I thought he would be at the wedding up in New York. So he's a big Cincinnati basketball fan. Do you guys ever have any spirited Temple Cincinnati American Athletic Conference hoops debates?
All the time. He is just beyond a super fan for Cincinnati basketball. And so I text with Nick anytime Cincinnati and Temple play, and anytime something good happens for the Cincinnati program. So we were texting during March Madness, and a lot of Bobby Huggins stories from Nick. He's one of those guys because he has achieved some level of celebrity or massive levels of celebrity actually, and because he's so tied to being such a booster for the university. He's been around the program, so he's got really good Bobby Huggins stories and really good, I'll just randomly 7 in the morning prepping for the show, I'll make a Danny Fortson reference and that he completely appreciates, or a Nick Van Exel reference. And so we bonded very quickly on that and a few other things. So Nick's my guy. He's got a bit of a cheesy reputation because he was in a boy band. But if you know me, I love the boy band. So I was privileged to work with him, and I'm lucky to be able to call him an actual friend, not just like I worked with him once.
And I would tell our listeners, just look up Big Morning Buzz and Andrew's role in the boy band episode that you guys did. Was that had to be a tremendous moment in your life, right? I mean, like, to have the groups that you had there, that was amazing.
Yeah, well, stupid VH1, like, the clips expire, so if you were to go on YouTube try to find some of those, I have to see if those still exist, but there were two situations like that. One, we had because they were going on tour. So we had Backstreet, 98 Degrees, and Boyz II Men, all like 15 guys on the same show, and all 15 of them performed. And we did like a game show with them. And for each round, I came out dressed as a member of each group, and you know, sort of messed around and you know, gave them the business. So that was definitely a highlight. And then Hulk Hogan came on the show, and I basically dressed. I got in full Hulk Hogan, you know, appearance. I did the wig and the mustache and the boa and the tights, and I did like a muscled chest plate. And I did full music and entrance. I did Hulk Hogan's full 80s music and entrance, and ripped off the T-shirt and did the pose down with Hulk Hogan on my show, which was a personal highlight because I am a huge wrestling fanatic. So that was pretty cool. Getting really to meet my like childhood idol was just a huge thrill.
And before I ask you about the current state of Temple Sports with hoops and football, I want to ask you, I mean, I'm sure you have a ton of stories about working with the WWE, and that, I remember when that opportunity came up, you're like, it may be a short-term thing. Everybody's told me that they burn through people pretty quickly, but I just got to go do it. Tell our listeners what it was like to be in what was essentially, I would imagine, one of your dream jobs, and to be writing in that environment and that process.
Yeah. Well, as everybody knows, wrestling is completely real.
Of course.
And, no.
Maybe I think Dalton feels like his dreams were just crushed. He's sitting here laughing. Maybe he didn't know.
I've never been a wrestling fan, so I can't relate, unfortunately.
It was amazing. I mean, like, I'm a 30-plus year wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. So started in 1986. I was, like, you know, 6-7 years old. And I've been a fan ever since. And in 2006, I got the chance to write for the WWE, for the SmackDown brand. And, you know, I was traveling all over the country on Vince McMahon's private jet every week to different cities, and driving overnight with legends like Dusty Rhodes and the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase and all kinds of, because those guys were on the staff, those guys were on the writing staff, the booking committee. So just really got to like almost like see behind the curtain and live like it was like being the bat boy on your favorite baseball team. Like, I'm just like watching this machine work, and I get to throw out an idea every once in a while. It was really, really amazing. The unfortunate side is that, you know, wrestling is a shark. It's like shark-infested waters. It's a very political environment, and I was very young at the time. And so the cautionary tale I always tell people is that I got the job way, way too early in my career, at a time when I didn't necessarily have the producing confidence, and really just the personal confidence to be able to hold my own backstage with all these giant personalities and these giant egos. So if I were to get the job now with all the experience that I've accrued over sort of 16, 17 years in production, I'd be much more equipped to, you know, really crush it and be there long term now. But I got the job when I was 25, 26 years old, and I was just sort of wide-eyed, and, you know, I was intimidated by Vince McMahon and all kinds of things. But yeah, I flew on his private jet, and I got yelled at by him face to face, just really, really. If I have the best bar stories ever for the rest of my life, like if you're seated next to me at the bar and we bring up wrestling, I'll tell you some incredible, incredible backstage stories from my my time in WWE. But one thing I can tell people who are interested, a while back I wrote an article for Complex, which you could Google and find, about how I got the job, and, you know, what the job was like, and other sort of, and then other notable people who have had the job of writing for professional wrestling. And it was called Wrestling with a Dream Job. So if you Google that title, Wrestling with a Dream Job, Complex Magazine, the article will come up. And I'm really proud of the article. It's a really nice snapshot into sort of how I got the job and what the job was like. And so if any of your listeners, and John, I know your students are all, you know, a lot of interests and wanting to get into different kinds of writing, I recommend it.
And also, we should know, too, that you go on with Jody McDonald every once in a while to talk wrestling and WIP.
I am the official WWE correspondent of 94WIP. Again, through Twitter, I became friends with Spike Eskin years back, and when he used to do the overnights, he used to have me on to handicap pay-per-views and talk, you know, current storylines. and he dubbed me the official WWE correspondent of 94 WIP. And then when Spike moved into an executive role and off the radio, he handed me over to Jody McDonald, who, which was so crazy because he was like my idol growing up. Like, I used to listen to Jody Mack and Mack and Mack in the mid-days with, you know, Glenn Macnow. I used to listen to him when I was a kid. He's like, he's my number one sports talk guy of all time. So to be able to, like, be sort of friends with Jody Mack, and he texts me and says, hey, do you want to come on and talk WrestleMania? You know, it's such a thrill. It's really an honor. And so, and Jody, he's an older guy now, and he's so busy, and he keeps up with the product. It's amazing.
He's great. I actually had a chance to go on probably like 5 or 6 years ago when he was on 97.5. And he was on with Harry Mays, and they were asking me some Temple stuff, and it was a thrill to talk to him. And it's funny how things come full circle, because his daughter, Maddie, went to Temple, worked at WHIP. I'm their advisor. She just graduated, and we're having Jody come back for this radio networking event that we're doing later on this month. So, same as you. I was just listening to him growing up and heard him say, appreciate it. You know,
Back, do me a favor.
So let's wrap things up talking about, you know, you're still, you're a Temple grad. You worked on a really talented Temple news staff. You worked with Kristen Graham, who went on to become a Pulitzer Prize winner at the Philadelphia Inquirer. You're still a Temple fan. Follow up with the football team, the basketball team. Your current opinion on the state of Temple hoops, everybody wants them to get back to making deep runs in March. Fran Dunphy's been able to win a lot in the regular season. Success in March has kind of evaded him. They had two big injuries this year with Josh Brown and Trey Lowe. That obviously impacted them. It looks like they're bringing in a good recruiting class. What's your view of the program right now and where it should be headed and what you'd like to see?
Look, I'm a complete outsider. I follow it completely as a fan, whatever games I get in New York, which actually has been great. The last couple seasons, we've gotten a lot of games played up here in New York. So I have followed the team quite a bit. And also, I have a direct line to Johnny DC, John DiCarlo. So any questions I have, you promptly answer them for me. But for the most part, I just want to, I'm a fan. I watch it just like everybody else. And, watching the tournament this year, at some point, and everybody loves Fran Dunphy, he's universally beloved. But at some point, this guy has to produce, right? Mm-hmm. Regular season wins, are not enough. At some point, he needs to start recruiting like an actual, Villanova is 20 minutes away, and somehow they're able to get championship caliber players, and then Temple, it somehow isn't, and somehow are scraped to me as an outsider, scraping the bottom of the barrel with sort of transfers and junior college guys and fifth-year seniors and sort of low-level prospects. And it's just frustrating as a fan because, we were there for really, really good teams, and I'd love for that to happen again. And I have hope with this current recruiting class, these four guys that are coming in, and last year's, and then, moving forward with last year's recruiting class, that those sort of six prospects can turn into something in two to three years. But I just think, as nice of a guy as he is, at some point, it's got to be make or break for Fran.
What about the football team? You and I were here when the football program was really struggling in the Big East, and then it was obviously almost dropped entirely 11 years ago. So we've seen, some dark moments in Temple football. Then it started to turn around with Al Golden and Steve Adazio. And then they beat Penn State. They almost beat Notre Dame. They're paying their coaches $2 million a year, sending guys, multiple players to the NFL. Do you ever think you would see it get to this point?
Yeah, just one last thing on basketball, and then I'll answer that question.
Sure.
Do you guys think that this class is coming in? Do they have a potential to sort of build something here finally?
I think so. Dalton, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think with this class, I think this upcoming season is the season that is kind of the deciding factor for Fran. I don't think they fire him in any way, but I think this is the year that he's going to have a lot of talent. I think they can win a game or maybe even two games in the tournament. They got to get there, of course, but I think they have the potential to do so.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, buddy. What are you going to say?
Which kid of the four is the one to really that I should really be excited about? Is it Mormon? Because he's sort of the most athletic kind of guy that I've seen Temple recruit in a long time.
I would say, too, there's J.P. Mormon, who you mentioned, who's like a 6'7 swingman from Greensboro Day School in North Carolina. And then another kid that I think you'll like is Devondre Perry, or Dre Perry, who plays at Baltimore Poly. You know, when Dwayne Killings was still at Temple before he took the job at UConn, DK would say he really reminds me of Lance Stevenson. He's another guy who's like a good wing talent, maybe not quite the shooter that Mormon is, but really springy, really athletic, really plays hard. I had a chance to see him play AAU ball over the summer, and he really just passes the eye test. He's really strong,
right.
Drives to the rim hard. And I would say Nate Pierre-Louis, the kid who's coming in from Roselle Catholic, closer to your way up in North Jersey, is really talented. He's a really good scorer, but they'll probably bring him along a little bit more slowly because he's behind some fairly talented guards. But the one thing, and then there's Justin Hamilton, the big man from North Carolina who's got a ton of potential, but will probably be more of a developmental guy. I'd say Perry and Mormon are the two guys that will probably play a lot next year. But the cool thing is, and we'll see if this matches up and if it actually takes shape, but when I've talked to, we've had JP and Dre Perry on this podcast, and especially, JP Mormon and Nate Pierre-Louis on this podcast. Nate talked a lot about, I think these guys are very aware of where the program is, and they keep saying, we want to get it back to where it was. Like Nate Pierre-Louis frequently mentions Eddie Jones, trying to make Aaron McKee proud. We want to be tough. We want to be physical. So I think they kind of know where the program is, what the fan base is looking for, and where how they keep saying, we want to get Temple back to where it was in the 90s and the early 2000s. So at least in terms of a mentality, I guess that's something to be excited about. We'll see how it goes. But those two guys, Mormon and Perry, are the two guys I'd say that you'll probably see most on the court next year.
Well, that's good to hear. But to your Temple football question, man, and you can attest from being a student in the same era that I was a student. I mean, we did not see any of this coming, and nor could we even imagine this would be the case. And also, I just watch Temple football now, and I'm jealous. That's it. That's my biggest feeling when I watch them, is I'm just ridiculously jealous that I wasn't in college for a team that is on College game day and, you know, making bowl games. Because, I mean, the campus is pretty bumping now with a lot of nightlife and places to eat and places to socialize. But sort of, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, the campus was sort of, you know, barren on the weekends, and we would have killed to have Temple games that meant something on a Saturday to sort of plan our week around and tailgate and, you know, paint our faces. Not that I would have done that because I'm too neurotic, but you know, like, it would have changed our college experience. And so I purely look at it from a nostalgic point of view, and I look at it like, man, of course, my luck, I leave and then they get good. So it's a very defeat, you know, that's my perspective. But I'm all for it. I get very excited for them, and I love what I see from Jeff Collins. I think everything he says sounds great, and I love that he and Matt Rule are like buddies. So I hope that we keep some sort of consistency. It sounds like they've recruited some really good players. And I love, again, going back to my obsession with the NFL draft, I love seeing that there's like 3 to 4 prospects from Temple that are highly regarded in the draft process. So I'm excited all the way around.
Buddy, thanks so much for spending some time with us again. We've been fortunate to be talking to Andrew Goldstein. Follow him on Twitter at AngeGold. That is AngeGold. Subscribe to his podcast. Sorry I've been so busy. You can find it on iTunes. Again, you can hear Janine Garofalo. You can hear Judah Freelander. Hear a lot of funny people, a lot of great stuff. I'll catch up with you soon, buddy. Tell Jamie and Dusty that we said hello, and thanks for spending some time with us, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew.
Got it. Johnny, much appreciated, Dutch. Great to talk to you. And to the rest of your team, you guys do a great job.
Thank you,
Andrew.
Well, I appreciate it.
It's time for our sometimes serious and sometimes silly mailbag. We appreciate all the love and the questions on Twitter and the message boards. First question comes from James Rutfield on Twitter. Top 5 Temple Athletics overused phrases and hashtags. Also, how do I know if this rash on my leg is something to worry about or not?
this guy's a piece of work. Top 5 Temple Athletics overused phrases or hashtags. Yikes. It's dripping with sarcasm, right? I don't want to say they're overused. I mean, I will say, like, they stick. I mean, they've got a pretty good social media campaign. I mean, you've got the OOU hashtag, which stands for one of us. Yeah, the coaches mm-hmm. have said that. I can't say they're probably like the first ones to do it. You got the GDQ, greatness yeah. doesn't quit.
Stack days.
I mean, stack days is the big one now that Jeff Collins and the staff seem to be using. Overused phrases. Those are the three hashtags that stick out. What other overused? I don't know, man. I can only come up with three. There are a lot of other phrases that have been around, but I wouldn't say they were overused. I mean, the biggest thing you think of in Temple sports in the modern era is winning is an attitude from John Chaney. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anybody would say it was overused. It was like a hallmark. It was a thing that people would say. Al Golden used to say 2 acres and a ball, mm-hmm. saying that's all we need. You know, to play a game.
Steve Adazio's dudes, is that something that's
yeah, like
overused?
Be a dude. You know, Adazio has definitely gotten his money's worth out of that one. You know, be a dude. I'm sure there'll be a couple others I think of, but I'm stuck on those three. Anything else I'm missing?
I'm trying to think. Those are the ones that I would have came up with, but I just off the top of my head, I think that's really all I have. I would have said, you know, dudes or something like that, like you said, with Al Golden as well, and John Chaney's winning as an attitude. There's nothing that comes to my head. I'm sure there's plenty others out there that I can't think of right now, but they definitely go all in with all of their hashtags and stuff. But I think that's kind of the era that we're in now, where you got to try to attract, you know, recruits and stuff like that. You got to kind of get them interested and stuff. So you got to find ways to have your own niche, kind of.
Hey, we'll have to ask Mr. Rutfield if he has a top five list, and we're not getting the other two that he has in mind. As for a rash on his leg, I don't know. Between James Rutfield and Pat Egan, these guys take the cake for the craftiest questions. I don't know where this rash is on your leg, James, and I don't really want to know. Go to the doctor.
Yeah,
he'll tell you if it's something to worry about. That's my 2-cent medical advice.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor either. Sometimes my dad thinks he's a doctor, but we're not doctors. I don't have a medical degree. That's not my field of choice. Next question comes from our long lost friend Greg Payone of Comcast Sportsnet. His question is, why did I get fired? Where is my severance package of Al Scoop magnets and thumb drives?
Okay, Greg, first of all, I gave you a magnet. I gave you a thumb drive. You were not fired. You just don't big time this. He's covering the Flyers. He's covering a little bit of everything. I'll see him every once in a while. Yeah, I got to get to the podcast. I'm like, yeah, open invitation. So what he's trying to do now is just pass the buck. He's probably spending too much time. The weather's nice. He's probably going to be at CJNX tonight or somewhere on Main Street in Manyunk. Maybe he'll be at Peck Miller's up on Ridge Avenue. Who knows where he'll be. Maybe the Houston or Houston Playground, wherever they say it, reliving his youth basketball days. But, yeah, you were not fired. You know you weren't fired. If you want more magnets, if this is just your play, get more magnets and more flash drives, all you had to do was ask, buddy. But we like, come back to us, Craig. That's all we're saying. Come back to us. We miss your sarcasm. We miss your wit. Maybe you'll be with us for the spring game. Who knows? But we got to get our credential requests in pretty soon, so you got to let us know.
He was not terminated.
No.
He was not terminated. No. Last question comes from Tom Hanson on Twitter. Who would run a faster 40-yard dash time, Matt or myself?
I see you. I think Matt's a solid athlete. I think you're going to get him on strides. I can see Matt being, I mean, Matt's not sure, but I think you got a faster 40 time.
I play golf. There's a reason I play golf. I'm not a runner. But I think my stride plays to my advantage. Matt may be able to have the quick burst, but I'll get him in the long run by the time the 40 yards is up.
See, I see you as having like good quick twitch, like strong out of the blocks. You're very precise. You're very precise in everything you do. You're precise with your schedule. You told me once that as a student at Temple, you know exactly, you have your meals planned out. You know when you're going to like fourth meal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. That's precision.
Yeah.
Carries into everything.
Yeah, I would. I don't think I'd be quick off the block. I'd have to get some momentum for sure, because I'm not a fast. My height is good in many places, but I don't think it would be good for speed. I don't have a lot of speed, but I have the length and the stride to be able to get it. Like out here on campus, when I'm walking past people, my stride is a great advantage because I can just zoom by people and they don't even know I passed them. So
we'll say that Kyle's lagging behind. He's last in a 40-yard dash of the four of us. Is Kyle finishing last?
That's interesting. It'd probably be Matt and I. I think you and Kyle would be a close battle.
I'll take it.
Yeah, but I think you would nudge him in the end. But I think it'd be very close.
Kyle would probably try to push me and do something dirty, right?
Yeah.
Trip me or something like that, fight a little dirty.
If it's an individual run, I think you'd get him by a nudge. But I think if you're running 40 yards side by side, I think you'd pull something out of his pocket and throw it on your shins or something.
Probably.
<that.
laughs> Old Tanya Harding act or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. But we appreciate all the questions and tweets out there for us for the mailbag this week. And that's gonna do it for us this week. That was an interesting Al Scoop podcast. It's you and me, John, but it was a good time as always.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have, Kyle and Matt back next week. And that'll be our podcast leading into the spring game. So there'll be plenty to talk about. We'll look at a lot of key position battles, stuff to look for, more interviews and more audio for you. So thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week. And a big thanks to our friend Andrew Goldstein. And again, tune in on iTunes to listen to his podcast. Sorry I've been so busy with Matt Goldich. It's great stuff. A lot of great guests, some funny people, and some big names they bring in. So big thanks to him for spending some time with us this week, and we will talk to you guys next week.